This is the second of our lecture series this morning of briefings from the top of distinguished women, selected distinguished women, I would say, because each of you are as well. I just talked with our second speaker and asked her, because of her voluminous biog, what would she like for me to say? I had marked some things. She said, just tell them I'm a native Texan. All right, give her a hand. And I'd like to say on July 15th, President Carter nominated her, and she's been approved and confirmed by the Senate as General Counsel for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. She will give you her presentation and tell you whatever else she wants you to know about her. And at the conclusion of her presentation, we will have time for questions and answers. I hope we will have time to clear the room for our next speaker. So each of you, take your time in asking a question, and let's not try to ask all of the questions any one of us, but let's give everybody an opportunity. Would you please join me in welcoming our General Counsel from Department of Agriculture? Thank you.
Oh, you're recording. I can't do it. Okay.
Well, I want to...
Thank you. I want to take a little more informal approach, and I want to cover a variety of subjects. The first thing is that I am a Texas delegate, and so I've just come from the opening session, and I want to start out by telling you what's happening over there. The second thing I want to talk about is how I, as a woman, became general counsel. And third, I want to philosophize just a little bit about what we all ought to be doing as a result of this convention and as a part of it. I wish that we could all be over in the general session because it is so exciting and it is such a good feeling. You know, when I was on that plane coming from Washington, my plane was late. It was crowded. I couldn't get a seat. The food was terrible. My luggage got lost. I arrived at the hotel. I couldn't get a room. I couldn't get a key. I was standing in line for hours, and I thought, whoa, what am I doing here? And then this morning I went into the convention hall, and it is just packed. You know, the floor has all of the signs like political conventions with each of the states listed on it in big letters. Some of the states now have balloons, which they've bought, and there are now various of the states that have balloons on top of their state placards, which they are waving and stomping and all. Wisconsin is wandering around with a huge sign that says women's rights are as American as applesauce. And so they're wandering around the floor with this big banner. The women from Iowa have a big placard that says Iowa, the Sunshine State, I think. I'm not sure what it said. But they all have joined hands, and they're doing a snake dance through the aisles. The press, you have the floor of the convention, and then you have the press, which is lining the side of it with special guests just behind them, and then some of the observers in the back. And then you have, of course, the platform. The session didn't start until 10. It was a little bit late starting. There are Secret Servicemen all over the place, as you would imagine. At the beginning of the opening session, most of the commissioners were on the stage, and then first Mrs. Johnson came out and was giving a standing ovation. Then Mrs. Ford came out and was given a standing ovation. And then Mrs. Carter came out and was given a standing ovation. And then Belle Abzug came out, and the place went wild. It really is a good, positive feeling. Gloria Scott from Houston gave the introductory remarks, which were welcoming all of those on the stage and in the hall and all of those who are not with us but who are watching it on TV or who are participating in workshops and so on, a welcome to the convention. And then she introduced Mayor Fred Hoffunks, who is the mayor of Houston, who gave a speech saying that Houston is a city that is on the move. And he talked about how the city was trying in its own way to be a symbol of what the convention was trying to be to the country, that he, as mayor, had established a women's advocate as part of his official office, that they have passed resolutions against discrimination of various kinds, that they have tried to establish positive programs for women in Houston. And one of his opening comments was that we, the citizens of Houston, a majority of whom are women, welcome you. And then talked about how the things that were happening in Houston, in his administration, he would hope would become a part of what's happening across the country. There are two deaf interpreters on the stage who are interpreting for the deaf. They do have court reporters at the front who are trying to take it all down, so there will be an official proceeding of the entire convention. They were just getting ready to introduce the first ladies to give their speeches, and then Barbara, Jordan. Barbara, you know Barbara. And then Barbara was just getting ready to come on and make the opening address, and she looks very good. We had heard some rumors about her health, but she has lost a lot of weight. Everyone is wearing ultra suede, including Barbara. they've had some problems, of course. The convention had set standards on what kinds of press people would be allowed on the floor, and neither of the Dallas papers have sufficient circulation to have been allowed on the floor. And that is causing some problems. So I'm sure they're going to try to change that. They also had some rules about allowing television and radio on the floor, but allowing silent media or photographers and that sort of person on the floor only in 20-minute segments to try to keep the floor a little bit clear. And that's causing some problems because they are trying to cover for their media. So I think they may change part of that. But it really is a good feeling. I should have said as the program started, after Gloria Scott gave her remarks, Fred Hoffeintz gave his welcome. We did have the TSU choir that sang was singing the song Glory, Glory, Hallelujah and coming in, and everybody was singing with them. And then the organ was playing sort of a waltzy thing, and women started shouting ERA, ERA, and that was a lot of fun. And then the Girl Scouts came in and did the presentation of the flag. And it was great because they had Girl Scouts of all different ages and minority groups, and you could tell, I mean, one little girl looked like she was about four, and she had the cutest little pigtails, and she was all dressed up, and she was having, you could tell she was proud. And then we sang the national anthem and paused for a moment for those who wish to give thanks or a moment of silent meditation in any way that they chose to do so. And then we're moving into the program. So it really is at this point a very positive feeling, and so far there's no sign of discord or problems. There is, of course, as you would imagine, all the people running around saying, what's the strategy for this afternoon, and what is this group going to do, and what's that group going to do, and how are you going to vote? And there's a lot of that going on, but the feeling is positive, and it really makes me pleased to be here at this convention and to have you here. I hope some of you will get in on observer passes, or that you will watch on TV, because it's a great thing right now, and really makes me feel good about the women in this country. On a more personal level, for a few minutes, I think all of us come in different ways, but all have come to a place where we are trying to dedicate ourselves to the principle that each woman should be able to accomplish as much as she can, and that we should not in any way engage in conduct which keeps that woman from being able to accomplish the maximum amount. You know, I think when we come to conventions like this, there are many things that we might say. Excuse me just a moment. On a very personal level, I certainly have a great deal to be grateful for as a woman to other women. As I look back in my own personal history, I think the first woman I would think about, as perhaps many of you would be my mother, because my mother is a symbol to me of many other women that I care about today. My mother was a very talented woman with a good educational background, and yet who was told, because she was the Methodist minister's wife, that it was inappropriate for her to work, and so that she should serve instead in the church. And I think in many ways my mother has tried through me to accomplish things that she would like to have accomplished herself, and it is a great pleasure to me that I can be a source of pride to her in all of the things that she's done. And certainly as I think back, the woman, my mother, has to be given a lot of credit for all of the extra hours she spent having me read or trying to expose me to new opportunities or to new thoughts or travel or all of the things that have made it possible for me to accomplish in other ways. And then I think of a woman who was my speech teacher, and I think all of us could probably look back and pick out women teachers in our background who had very great and significant impact upon us. My own speech teacher was a woman who took the attitude that if you can just talk to people, you can do almost anything. And I know that a lot of what I've been able to accomplish has come because of that woman. Or I think about women in 1971 when I brought the case Roe versus Wade, which was the Texas abortion case decided favorably by the U.S. Supreme Court. That it was a group of women who were very concerned about the cares of other women and their reproductive history and wanted to be able to make a contribution to them. In fact, it was a woman named Jane Roe, who was the plaintiff in that case from Dallas, Texas, who cared enough about other women to become the plaintiff in that case, which has since meant a Supreme Court ruling that each woman in this country has the right to decide for herself whether she will continue or terminate a given pregnancy. And then I think about a group of women who in 1972 encouraged me to run for the Texas legislature, who were there when I needed them, who ran my campaign, who taught me what to do. In fact, I even remember one day when I was told I had to get out and hand out cards. And I was afraid because I thought it was really an imposition to people to march up to them on the street and hand them your literature and make them stop whatever they were doing and talk about politics. And it was that group of women who took me and put me on a street corner and gave me 150 cards and told me I couldn't come back till I handed them all out. That I suppose through that and many other ways made it possible for me to be an elected woman. I remember times when my first opponent, as I've told some of you as individuals, would refer to me only as that sweet little girl running for office. And it was other women who had the same sense of outrage that we should be looked on as being foolish and childish for wanting to serve in the Texas legislature or as elected women. And it was those women who made it possible for me to have to seek elected office and to win. And then I think about a lot of women who, as I served in the Texas legislature, were really responsible for all of the issues that we were able to work on, whether it was ratification of the ERA here in Texas, whether it was putting an ERA in our own Texas Constitution, whether it was increased protection for rape victims, whether it was a positive credit bill for women, whether it was kidney health care for all persons, whether it was education and increased funding of education, all of the things that I cared about in the legislature were things where women were very crucial to the accomplishments that we were able to make. And then I think about those women who, as part of the National Women's Political Caucus and several other groups, made suggestions to the president and to the administration of other women who should be considered for federal appointive office. And it was those women who were in large part responsible for my name being considered as a person for appointment in the Carter administration. I go through this simply to indicate to you that it is my firm belief that women in all areas of life and in all kinds of political participation can make a very great difference in what we accomplish as a community, as a state, and as a nation. I say that because it seems to me that the background of this woman's conference is in part set against a background, a feeling that one group of women is being judgmental and critical of other women who have not chosen exactly the same path that they have. It is my hope that as a part of this conference, we will come to a position where we will, without judging harshly and without animosity, take a position that each woman is entitled, as I said in the beginning, to make whatever her life's plan is, but without trying to impede or judge those who take a different stance. The administration is trying, I believe, to make positive contributions in the field of women's rights. The fact that Rosalynn Carter is on the platform and is making the very positive statement she is about ERA, and some of you may have heard her last night say that she appeared as a representative of the president, and so on. The fact that many women, if this conference had been held 4 years ago, we could not have had nearly the number of distinguished women speakers that we do at this particular conference, because we simply didn't have that many serving in top positions. So I think the administration is trying to make a commitment to advance the cause of women. In agriculture particularly, we are trying to do some very positive things. We have 3 of the 8 top people in agriculture who are women. The general counsel is a woman. The assistant secretary for nutrition and food safety is a woman, Carol Foreman, whom some of you may hear tomorrow. She's an excellent speaker if you have time to go hear her. And our new assistant administrator is a black woman who is the former administrator from a college who is currently taking office, Joan Wallace. We have also sought to start making some real differences in being there. For example, we, like all the other federal agencies, are currently undertaking a look at all of our regulations and statutes with the specific question of how do these regulations and statutes affect women. And the Justice Department is coordinating that effort. But every U.S. agency and department will be making the same effort during the coming year. For example, one of the things we are looking at is how the Farmers Home Administration, which is a U.S. Department of Agriculture agency, whether or not in its credit regulations and in the regulations about who can get loans for housing, whether there are ways that we either knowingly or unknowingly discriminate against women. We are in charge of the entire food stamp program, the women, infants, and children's nutritional program, school lunch programs, breakfast programs. We are trying to look at how those programs impact women in particular and see if there are things we can do to make those programs more readily available to all who need them. In my position as General Counsel of Agriculture, there are a number of other things that I am responsible for. When I was first offered a position with agriculture, I wasn't really sure what agriculture did. I have since found out a lot. One is, for example, we are in charge of all of the work for the Federal Forest Service, so that all of the issues of condemnation of land for the national forest, wilderness areas, pesticide, the use of pesticides in national forests, wilderness trails, the use of water within national forests, issues relating to the cutting of timber within national forests, the issues of women firefighters, women employed by all the various Forest Service agencies, all come within our jurisdiction. The second thing we are in charge of is all the Farmers Home Administration loans, and there are an immense number of those, as you would imagine. The third thing we're in charge of is all of the programs on rural electric and rural telephone service and the issues of loans and services provided through those agencies. We are also in charge of all the contracts for marketing agricultural products to foreign nations, so that we, for example, will be approving contracts for grain shipments to Russia above a certain point. We are in charge of the screwworm eradication program with Mexico. We are in charge of mutual agricultural research with Israel, Lebanon, and a lot of other countries, all the foreign programs. We have another area which is nutrition, food, food stamps, all of those kinds of programs. We have another area which is marketing of agricultural products. We have another which is called Packers and Stockyards, that is in charge of all the inspection of meats, and packing in stockyards questions under Carol Foreman and that you might be interested in asking her about tomorrow are programs like the use of nitrites and nitrates in your meats, red meat products. We have a great controversy going right now on whether or not you can use what they have traditionally called mechanically deboned meat in different products. What that really turned out to be was, in essence, a process by which you took all the meat off of bones originally. Then you took and ground up the bones and got sort of an extruded paste, and they used a percentage of the paste in meat products. Now, we're not trying to say you can't use it at all, because it's a very good source of calcium, but we are trying to regulate the size of the bone chips, the amount of it that's included in different products, and we're trying to say that consumers ought to really know what they're buying, and that the term mechanically deboned meat doesn't tell you that. So there's a whole area relating to food that we're working with. Another area is on regulation of all kinds of animal and plant health services. For example, when you come from a foreign country into the United States and have someone who inspects you for fruits, vegetables, and other things coming into this country, those are all laws which my office administers. Or when you might have read recently about a man who was fined for, it's called the Kentucky walking horse problem, where certain people use methods to make the Kentucky walking horse's feet very sensitive so they prance higher. And that is illegal, and we try to prevent that. We are also in charge of standards for shipment of animals, standards for what kind of facilities must be used for animals in captivity, such as mammals. It's really a program with a great, great scope, and one that does affect many, many people. We are also trying to look at federal employment in general, and certainly the Federal Women's Program has been a leader in that regard. It has been very interesting for me to go back and do some research on the history of women in the federal government and to learn that until after the Civil War, there were almost no women employed in federal government. The first big employer of women was the treasurer under Abe Lincoln, who hired women to cut up the currency, saying that women could handle scissors better than anybody else. And from that time, we have expanded into a variety of other programs, but still obviously have a great deal to do, to go. I would like to close with some general comments, open it to questions and answers and discussions, and then we've been asked to vacate the room about 10 minutes early so that other people can have an opportunity to be ready for the next meeting. It seems to me that one of the main issues I would hope we would all be thinking about at this time is the issue of where are we going in the women's movement. We have used the topic for this meeting, American Women on the Move. And yet, to me, that has no connotation of where it is that we are moving to, but simply a concept of movement. I would hope that during this weekend we could start to define, both on individual levels and on a group level, the question of where is it that we are moving to. On the personal level, it would seem to me that there are a number of criteria that we should be thinking about. One would be the criteria of trying as individuals to allow all others the freedom of their choices in lifestyle. As we come together in a group like this, it seems to me that one of the great significance of the meeting is the chance to meet women and men from a variety of other backgrounds, communities, ages, nationalities, and so on and so forth, and to find in each of those persons an appreciation for the particular characteristics that they have as individuals. There is such a tendency, I think, to try to be judgmental and perhaps even with a sense of animosity toward those who don't agree with us. And yet it seems to me that if we as individuals are to be given the kind of freedom that we want, we must give it to others and perhaps give it to them first. The second thing, it seems to me, as individuals, is that we must assume a great sense of determination if we are to move and if we are to move in a positive direction. As I think about the last 5 to 10 years, it is clear, I think, that each of us has been affected by the women's movement in terms of our expectations, in terms of the lives we lead now, and in terms of the changes that we have made in our lives in the past. And yet, the forces that currently exist are forces which I believe are very much against change and against those changes which we have already made. And if we do not become determined as individuals to make change, those changes will not occur. There are a number of changes that I think are significant and that must be made. For example, it seems to me as we look at the plan of action, and I hope each of you will read that very seriously, that there is a good indication of the kinds of very positive changes and movement that we would want to make. Whether you talk about the movement within the arts for women, which is the first thing we'll be debating on the floor, whether you talk about the movement in reproductive freedom, whether you talk about the movement in any of those plans, that is the kind of very positive movement that I hope we as a group can come to support. And then I would hope that as a group we could come to a feeling of joy in that movement. You know, sometimes I think when we come to conventions we get so bogged down in the details of how everything's going to go and afraid of how it's going to go that we lose the sense of joy that I would hope that there would be in each other, in the kinds of changes that have been made, and in the possibilities that a great convention like this gives us to move, but not just to move, but to move in a very positive way toward the plan of action. Thank you. Or get into any areas of discussion there that you're interested in, whether it's the strategy on the floor or what agriculture does or anything else on the front.
I'd like to ask about the grain sale. Can you extend the future as a woman business
farmer? Yeah. The U.S. Department of Agriculture is vitally concerned about the sale of agricultural product and prices, particularly to foreign countries. We in the Democratic administration right now are really sort of behind the eight ball. What in essence happened was that while the Republicans were in office, and I do not mean to speak disparagingly of the Republicans, but just to speak of the problems we're having, when the Republicans were in office, they were very fortunate in having a worldwide grain shortage, with the result that grain went to very high prices, for example, $4 a bushel for wheat. Right now, there is a surplus of grain throughout the country, with the result being that grain is now at about $2 a bushel. That leads to several problems. The first and major problem being that farmers are not getting as much for their product as it costs them to produce it. And that is caused by a number of factors. The price of land, the price of equipment, the price of fertilizers, the price of natural gas for irrigation, the price of all kinds of things, a major problem. Therefore, we've got Mr. Butts, a former Secretary of Agriculture, going around the country saying, when the Republicans were in, you got $4 for your wheat. Now you're getting $2. Who do you think is the better administration? I really don't think he should be taking credit for the Russian grain shortage in 1972 or 3. But we must, as a U.S. Department of Agriculture, move toward far greater sales to foreign countries. We do believe now that the Russians will be buying a minimum of about 15 million bushels, and we are hopeful that they will be buying a great deal more. We have trade negotiators at various conferences trying to be sure that there are no impediments against the movement of our grain outward. We are assigning about doubling the staff of the persons who in the past have been devoting full time to marketing American agricultural products overseas. And we really have done a good job in the past. If it weren't for our agricultural products, our agricultural products are the main area that give us any kind of balance of payment as far as the rest of the world is concerned. So we've done well in that sense. But we are putting a great effort on trying to greatly increase our sales. And that is a priority with Bob Berglund and John White and all of the top agriculture people. In the second row. Fine. Okay. That's right. That's right. That's right. Yes, there is. The speaker is exactly right in saying that the school lunch program was started as a way of using up excess agricultural products without as much attention being given to the nutritional needs of youngsters. Carol Foreman, again, who is the assistant secretary in that area, is devoted to nutrition, and we're doing a number of things. First Secretary of Agriculture Bob Berglund went 2 weeks ago and had lunch with fifth graders at a school there in Washington, D.C., and said that he kind of agreed with them. It wasn't very well cooked, and it was kind of cold, and he didn't like it either.